Chapter 7, On the March Again. The four children had a very pleasant, though somewhat silent, drive to the town. Their driver was a good-natured but very ignorant man, and his accent was so bad that Henry found it difficult to understand him when he did speak. He drove them almost through the town and drew up at a small hotel which stood on the outskirts. Here, he said, they could rest and dine if they chose. He should remain here for an hour or two, and before they left he would direct them on their way. However, as it was necessary for the children to spend as little as possible, and as Mademoiselle Lafleur had made up a little parcel of food which they had not yet touched, they parted from him at once with many thanks and offers of money, which he utterly refused to take. Following the road which he pointed out to them, they soon left the town behind and shared their simple meal in a quiet lane. It was now about 1 o'clock, and as the sun was very hot, so that they agreed not to walk any further just yet, as less than 3 hours' walking would bring them to the place where they meant to spend the night. Henry fell asleep. Louis persuaded Guillaume to tell him a story, and Marie leant back against the mossy bank on which they were sitting with the intention of listening to. But her thoughts soon strayed to the happy days, which seemed so long ago, and she forgot all about their present situation. It was Guillaume who, at the end of his second story, more than an hour and a half afterwards, suggested that they had better not stay too long in one place, and asked Marie if she were not rested. "Oh, Guillaume, I had forgotten all about the time," answered Marie, waking out of her daydream. "Of course, we ought to be going on, though it seems a shame to waken Henry." Exactly at this moment Henry opened his eyes, and remembering instantly their position, jumped up with the exclamation, "What? Have I been asleep? Why did you not wake me, Marie?" "Guillaume has only just reminded me that we ought to be going on," she said. "I had forgotten all about it, but I think we have plenty of time." They set out once more on their journey, but the day was still very oppressive, and they did not get on so fast as usual. After a time, they came to a place where two roads met, and were puzzled to know which to take. One was a continuation of the lane down which they had come, and was cool and shady in comparison with the other, a straight, dusty road between two walls which led through vineyards. Marie felt sure that the driver had told them to turn off here, while the boys inclined to think that he had told them to keep to the left along the lane. As Marie found herself in a minority, she soon gave way, and they went on along the lane for a long way. It grew dreadfully rough, little more than a cart track through waste ground thickly scattered with underwood and stunted trees. "I think we must have been wrong after all," said Henry ruefully, as they paused for a moment and sat down to rest. "This is no regular road at all now." "It may be better again further on," remarked Marie hopefully. "I think you were right, Marie," continued her brother. "I wish we had taken the other road. I am afraid it is almost too late to turn back tonight. Yet there does not seem much chance of our finding any shelter along here." "Well, it won't be the first time we have slept on the ground," said Guillaume cheerfully. "It is hot enough for anything, and we shall easily find a place to sleep in." "Well, we have still plenty of daylight left," said Henry, getting up again, "and we may get out of this wilderness again before we need think of stopping for the night. Shall we go on, Marie?" They went on for some distance, but the road did not improve, and the ground on their right rose in a steep bank to the height of 100 feet. The children grew very tired, as they had now been walking almost continuously for nearly 4 hours. They were just at the point of settling to go no further, and to find a good place to sleep in, when a sudden turn in the road brought them in sight of a small log house standing quite by itself a little apart from the road. And there was no sign of human habitation, and after the first exclamation of relief they began to hesitate about approaching it. It was clearly not the one to which they had been directed, and they had always been rather shy of strange houses. However, they agreed to walk round it and see what they could see before knocking at the door. As they approached, they heard a sound which at once made them forget all their doubts and hasten forward. It was the voice of a woman calling for help, but feebly, as if she were almost exhausted. Henry ran to the door, which was unfastened, and yielded readily to his push. The voice came from the room above, and he hastily mounted the rough step ladder, followed by the other three. The woman was lying upon a low bedstead in a corner of the room, bound hand and foot so that she could not move. There was no one else in the room, and as the children crowded forward to help her, the sudden relief was too much for her, and she fainted away. Lewis began to cry. Galoom looked round for water, and seeing none, slipped downstairs again to look for some. Marie raised the poor woman's head, and Henry set instantly to work at the cords which bound her. By the time Galoom returned with the water, she had opened her eyes again, and as her consciousness returned, she cried out in a voice of agony, "My baby! Oh, my baby!" The children started and looked round, but there was no baby anywhere, and a horrible idea came into Henry's mind that perhaps the woman was mad. But she cried out again, pointing to the door into a little inner room, "The baby, my baby, it has stopped crying for the last hour. My God, if it is dead!" Marie ran into the other room, and there, lying in a rough wooden cradle at the window, was the apparently lifeless form of an infant about 6 months old. She bent over it with a beating heart, but before she could lift it, the mother was behind her, having burst the last fastening of her bonds. She sank down on the floor as she caught her child in her arms. There was a moment's breathless suspense while she listened intently for the infant's breath. Marie never forgot the rapturous cry, "Alive! She is yet alive! Milk! Have they left me none, then?" Marie ran downstairs, and after a few minutes' hurried search discovered a jug half full of milk in one of the cupboards, and a cup which she brought upstairs, and at which the poor mother snatched eagerly. At first it seemed of no use. The child was faint and drowsy, and refused all food, but after some time a spoonful of the milk was swallowed, and the child showed signs of returning life. The mother did not cease her efforts till she had disposed of quite half a cupful of milk, and a faint color returned to the baby's cheek, and when she put the milk aside and rocked the child in her arms. Then, as if she became aware of the children's presence for the first time, she looked up from her child at Marie and said in a weary, patient voice, "Mademoiselle will think I have no manners, but I have been well nigh driven out of my mind. The good God sent help, as if by an angel, for none pass this way in general. I cannot ask Mademoiselle to sit down here, but if she and these young gentlemen will condescend to come downstairs, everything is at their service." "Are you strong enough to move about just yet?" asked Marie kindly. "Do drink a little of this milk yourself. You must want it almost as much as the baby. Rest a few minutes longer," as she continued as the three boys stole quietly downstairs, "and then you shall come down and tell us all about it." The poor woman leant back again with closed eyes, still, however, murmuring thanks and blessings on her unknown benefactors. After a few minutes the baby began to cry, the sweetest sound that the world contained just then for the poor mother. She rose to her feet and walked up and down, and when it again became quiet, she invited Marie to follow her downstairs. In the room below, she found the three boys who were eager in their inquiries after the poor little baby. Nothing had been taken from the house, which was indeed too poor to attract even the most avaricious, and the woman hastened to set what poor food she had in store before her visitors, who were hungry enough to enjoy anything. In the course of the evening, she told them that her husband had been a woodcutter and had died about 6 months ago, just before the birth of his child. She had lived here very quietly ever since, subsisting chiefly on the produce of her poultry, but that morning about 7 o'clock a small troop of horsemen had ridden up to the door and demanded food. She had nothing in the house but such poor supply of bread and milk as Madame Zwell was now kind enough to share, and they were very angry and had called her a heretic, which indeed she could not deny, that being one reason why she still lived there by herself. Then they grew worse and worse, and only one man prevented the rest from laying hands on her. He had got them away at last, but not before they had fastened her down as Madame Zwell had just seen, and there was her baby in the next crying room. In the next room, crying, crying. Ah, she prayed God that Madame Zwell might never know such a day as she had spent. Poor woman was even more devoted to her guests when she found that they were one in faith and suffering with herself. She offered them shelter for the night, before they had time to ask it, and busied herself in arranging her scanty furniture for that purpose directly after tea. They retired to rest very soon afterwards, though it was some time before sleep came to either Marie or Henry. It was another bright day when Marie woke up the next morning, and dressing herself and Louis as quickly as possible, she sent him to see if the boys were awake, and went herself to breathe the fresh morning air outside the house. She was struck for the first time by the beauty of this woodland home. There was a tolerably wide expanse of grass, with scanty clumps of brushwood, between the house and the steep bank, almost approaching the dignity of a cliff, which they had passed beside the night before. Behind was the forest, and single trees grew pretty thickly on either side. A little to the left there was a picturesque moss-covered shed, in front of which stood her hostess, clad in coarse blue linen and a bright red handkerchief, throwing corn to a large flock of poultry. Marie went to meet her and received a cheery good morning. "At least I am glad that they have not taken your hens, madame," she said. "And there were four fine ones just ready for market," answered the widow in a tone of regret, "and they have taken them. The rest ran into the forest, but one is thankful not to have lost more." Marie stood and admired the pretty creatures, and asked questions about them till her brothers came running out, and the widow proposed that they should have some breakfast. Soon afterwards they started once more on their journey, accompanied for some time, some way by the widow, in order that they should not again miss their way. The right road was not nearly so pretty, as it led for miles through vineyards, and often the walls on either side of the road rose so high as to shut out everything from sight but the rough and endless road. It was too early yet for the gathering of the grapes, and very few people were to be met. Moreover, soon after they had entered the main road, the sky clouded over and rain began to fall, a straight, heavy downpour, from which there was no escape. They thought at first of waiting till the rain was over, but could find no shelter which would really protect them, and besides it seemed likely to rain for some time. That was a dreary day. It never ceased raining, and they plodded on wet to the skin, scarcely venturing to sit down, and only eating a hurried, uncomfortable meal in the middle of the day. "What shall we do tonight, Henry?" asked Lewis about 5 o'clock after a long silence. "We can't sleep out of doors tonight."
"No, dear, I suppose not," said Henry. "We must stay and sleep in St. Germain tonight, instead of passing through it as we did at St. Etienne."
"Do you think we shall soon be there?" asked Lewis wistfully.
"I am so tired, and the road is getting so muddy that I keep slipping."
Poor Lewis at once said to his brothers and sister, while Gloom and Henry offered to carry him on a queen's cushion, and did so for some way, till he said he would rather try to walk again. It seemed a long, long road to St. Germain, and Henry had begun to fear that they must have again missed the way, before on a little rising ground they caught sight of its lights beneath them. By this time they were thoroughly drenched. The rain was still falling heavily, and Lewis even complained that he was cold. They were glad of the gathering twilight as they passed along the damp and dimly lighted streets, and glanced timidly at the different signboards. It would be the first time in their lives that any of them had slept in any sort of hotel, and Marie especially looked forward to this new experience with actual dread. More than once they passed a likely-looking place, after a little consultation, without being able to make up their minds to enter. At length, in a quiet street, they came to one where everything looked cleaner and more pleasant than those of the same grade which they had passed. The door was open and showed two rooms, one on either side of a passage. The one on the left was indeed full of men smoking and drinking, but they were tolerably quiet, and through the open door of the other room they saw a stout, comely woman, sitting near the threshold, with an expression of frankness and good humor, which inclined them to approach her. It was agreed that Henry should speak to her, and ask if they could have lodging for the night, as it was raining too heavily for them to go further. She looked rather sharply at him for a moment, and then replied in somewhat shrill tones that she might perhaps have beds, but that she was not accustomed to have tramps in her house. "But indeed we are not tramps," pleaded Marie, finding that Henry did not speak in answer to this charge. "We are on a journey to see some friends, and it is raining so that we do not want to go further tonight." "But certainly it is not a fit night for such a pack of children," said the woman, not unkindly. "Haven't you got anyone to look after you better than that?" "The poor child ought to be in bed this moment." And here she most unexpectedly took Lewis up in her lap and gave him a sounding kiss, a treatment for which Marie had to make him a hasty sign not to resent. "I suppose now you've no money," was her next remark. "Yes, we have. I think enough to pay for our lodging, and we should like some supper too, if not inconvenient to Madame," said Henry with courtesy, which flattered the woman, though it caused her to look at him with curiosity. "Jean, Jean," she cried out, turning toward the door, and as the summons was answered by a tall, rosy-cheeked damsel of 18, she continued, "Quick, then, here are some poor little half-drowned wretches who want supper and lodging. They must have dry clothes first, it strikes me, unless they all want to die of a fever tomorrow. Do you take the two boys to the lad's room, and give them a drop of hot water, and any clothes of Jacot or Henry while their own are drying. I'll look after the girl and the little one." Marie and Henry, who had with difficulty suppressed a burst of laughter at this novel description of themselves, now joined in expressing their warmest thanks to the kind-hearted woman. "Teens, teens," was all her remark. "Martha Pierrette is not the woman to turn out such a set of children on a night like this," and she bustled off with Marie and Lewis in such an energetic manner that before Marie knew where she was, she found herself enveloped in dry clothes from head to foot, and Jean's Sunday gown, which touched the ground upon her, and beheld Lewis, looking still odder, but every inch the little gentleman that he was, in a rough sort of jersey and a pair of loose gray trout drawers. Coming back into the cheerful little salon,
They found Jean busy spreading a cloth upon the table, and when the boys came in, equally odd in their attire, Madame speedily supplied them with some excellent soup, fried eggs, and an omelette, which they all thought delicious. During their meal, she took up her knitting and plied them with questions which they found rather difficult to answer. At last, she asked Henry his name. "Henry Lenard," he replied without hesitation, as they beforehand agreed that this was a name they could honestly adopt, since all the boys had it by baptism. "Lenard," she repeated musingly, "but yes, is it not a common name? Now, which of you might be the oldest, you or your sister?"
"We are twins," said both children, speaking at once.
"Ah, that accounts for my not being able to tell," remarked Madame Perrette sagely. "And how old is the little one?"
"Louis is 5," said Henry.
"Poor little thing. He is not fit for such a long walk. Your mother should have known better than to send him with you."
The tears sprang into Marie's eyes as she answered with a sob, "Our mother is dead."
"Teens, teens," exclaimed the woman in vexation at her own mistake. "Poor little things. And so there is no one to look after you. One might certainly have guessed it. Well, you shall be seen to tonight at any rate. And tomorrow you don't stir unless the weather's clear."
Jean, who had been serving the men in the other room, now came back again, and shortly after, Jacquot and Henry, merry little lads of 13 and 14, came in from a visit to some neighbors. Madame Perrault insisted on Louis going to bed, and the three older ones were thankful to follow his example. Their prayers were more fervent than ever that night. God had guided them so wonderfully. The next morning, to their great relief, was fine and clear, so after eating an excellent breakfast and paying a more moderate bill than they had feared, they took leave of their kind hostess with heartfelt thanks and set out once more upon their journey.